And welcome into the Wednesday edition of the Doug Russell Podcast. I didn't realize when we were launching the podcast and decided to do it this week that the Wednesday show was going to fall on International Podcast Day. But apparently that's what it is. It's trending on Twitter. By the way, since our first show on Monday, we're now available on Spotify, TuneIn, Alexa, iTunes, Stitcher, Amazon Music. No matter where you find your podcasts, and I've always found podcasts on iTunes, that's just me, but I know and have gotten some requests, are you going to be on Spotify, for example? Yes, we are now on Spotify. Are you going to be on Stitcher? Yes, we are now on Stitcher. So anywhere that you find podcasts, you'll be able to find this show moving forward. So I'm really excited about that. And again, I said this on Monday, but I think it bears repeating. I'm entirely new to the podcast game. They tell me these things make a difference. So we would love you forever if you hit the subscribe button. And while you're there, if you give us a nice review, don't be stingy with the stars. I am told it all makes a difference. So this is the Wednesday show. Monday shows are dedicated to primarily Wisconsin sports, right? Friday shows are dedicated primarily to Wisconsin sports. And as I said on Monday, and this is going to be how the Wednesday shows are. So again, forewarning, the Wednesday shows could be anything. It could be an old interview. It could be a look back into the past. It could be an entertainment interview. It could be a news interview. It could be a politics interview. There could be a myriad of things that we're going to do on the Wednesday show. And that's what we're going to do today. I have to start with the one thing that everybody is talking about today, and that was last night's debacle in Cleveland.
That was a hot mess inside a dumpster fire, inside a train wreck.
CNN's Jake Tapper. I think his colleague Dana Bash may have put it even more succinctly.
That was a shit show.
Donald Trump, Joe Biden, the current president of the United States, the former vice president of the United States, duking it out on stage. And this was ugly. I don't know who won. I know that we all lost when exchanges like this continued throughout the entire evening.
It's about you. That's what we're talking about.
All right, that's the end of the segment. We're moving on.
It didn't take them.
Well, Vice President,
can I be honest? It's a very important question.
Try to be honest.
He stood up.
The answer to the question is no.
Ukraine.
No, sir.
With $1 billion, if you
get
rid of
Trump, that is absolutely not true.
You're going to have,
gentlemen. I hate to raise my voice, but it seems to be, why should I be different than the two of you?
Not to copy Dana Bash's poignant and succinct description of last night, but it was a shit show. And I don't know what the American people, you're a voter, I'm a voter. I hope you're a voter. I know I'm a voter. I've already voted. I hope that what we get, if there are going to be more debates, and it didn't start with last night, although if you read any of the post-debate analysis, and I think that this is fair, this was the ugliest debate, the ugliest onstage debacle that American politics may have ever seen. I'm not telling you who to vote for. I think that that's something that you have to search your own conscience for. I will say that if there is another debate between President Trump and former Vice President Biden, the only way that this thing is going to work is not to have Chris Wallace yell at Donald Trump, because we know what kind of debater the President of the United States is. He's a bull in a china closet. Some people like the fact that he came in 4 years ago and broke all the dishes. Others don't like that about the president. But if you're going to have a debate, the only way that you can have a debate is if both sides are heard. And I think that the only way that you're going to be able to accomplish this is if they're in, I don't know, if you put them in glass cages because of COVID-19, maybe you can get away with that. I don't think they wanted to shake hands before or after last night's debate. I've always thought that was kind of silly. You shake somebody's hand and then you just go after them in the nastiest way possible for the next 90 minutes. And then you shake hands and walk off stage. I think that's ridiculous. I think it's always been ridiculous. I don't even like the handshake lines after hockey series. I think that's ridiculous, too. It's very Little League. That having been said, the only way that you're going to stop what happened on Tuesday night in Cleveland is if you have the moderator have the ability to just turn off the microphone. There's a little switch that if you just turn off the mic, you're going to hear what the guy says. I have one on my board. Why didn't Chris Wallace have one on his board last night? The president gets 2 minutes uninterrupted. The vice president gets 2 minutes uninterrupted. And when we say uninterrupted, we mean uninterrupted. Otherwise, why are we doing this? Otherwise, it's just going to continue to devolve into the shit show that we saw last night. All right. Those are my thoughts on the debate. I hope you vote. I hope you have an informed vote. Know what you're voting for, who you're voting for, and why you're voting for that person up and down the ballot. That's all I'll say about that. Moving on. As I have said on many occasions, on Wednesday, we do everything. And sometimes that includes going back into the Wayback Machine. And that's what we're going to do right now. Now, many of you know that Mike Wickett and I, years ago, did a morning show on WSSP Radio in Milwaukee and had a lot of fun with it. It came to an end almost 10 years ago, not quite 10 years ago. But thanks to Bill Michaels and his executive producer, Joe Zanzola, they reached out to Mike and I a couple of weeks ago and said, would you like to do the Bill Michaels Huddle Show on Thursday night? I immediately said, 1,000%, hook it up. Mike said, 1,000%, let's hook it up. Let's have some fun with it. So that's what we did a week ago Thursday, so a week ago tomorrow night. And the last portion of the show was us making our picks for the weekend. I don't like doing picks. I don't like making predictions. But nevertheless, sometimes you have fun with it. And what I always at least like to do is look back on what we got right and what we got wrong in the Wayback Machine.
The 0-2 Atlanta Falcons, who just watched it get away on the watermelon onside kick via Mike McCarthy. Only an onside kick could be named after food coming out of Mike McCarthy's institution. But that being said, they are hosting the 2-0 Chicago Bears. I mean, how about those Chicago Bears, guys? I'll start with you, Mike.
I missed the final minutes of the collapse of the Atlanta game because I was recording my podcast, Wicked on Wisconsin, after every Packers game. And so I didn't get a chance to see the very end, Bill, of that game. But what a choke job. How do they come back from that? Like, if you're the Atlanta Falcons, honestly, what kind of attitude are you going to have? Are you going to say, guys, we got to put that behind us, come back out, throw the ball to Julio, throw the ball to Calvin Ridley, or are they going to just choke it away? And on the flip side, Doug, Mitch Trubisky has 5 touchdown passes in the last 5 quarters. This guy is actually putting up good numbers for Chicago.
He's Mitch Trubisky.
Well. Yeah, but are they going to win? Is Mitch Trubisky and company going to win?
No, I Atlanta has to win this game at home. And I, Doug, I'll take the Falcons.
No, I'm going to take the Falcons as well. I just think they're desperate. They outplayed the Cowboys. It goes back to what we were saying in the last segment about do the Packers need to win halftime against the Saints coming up on Sunday. Well, you look at the Cowboys, they certainly didn't win the first half against the Falcons. They didn't win until like the last minute of the game against the Falcons last week. So I think Atlanta's desperate there at home. Chicago, I still think Mitch Trubisky sucks. I still think that he's playing out of his mind right now, and he's going to come crashing back down to earth. I pick Atlanta in this one.
I'm taking the Falcons in this one as well. The Rams, West Coast to East Coast, usually never fares well. The 2-0 Rams, the 2-0 Bills. I think the Bills are finally on to something with what they put together. Stephon Diggs is really been a big asset to that offense. I'm gonna take the Bills at home to knock off the Rams. Back to you, Doug.
Yeah, I think this one's going to be a close one as well. The one thing about Los Angeles and Buffalo this year is they've been having great quarterback play in the early going. Again, granted, it's only 2 games, but Jared Goff for the Rams, Josh Allen for the Bills, they've both been marvelous, and I think that this is going to be a close game. I don't necessarily think that it's going to be that high scoring a game, partially because, again, it's West Coast coming to East Coast, but I do think that the Bills are going to come away with a close victory, probably about 4 points or so.
I like Buffalo as well. I think the Rams running game right now is a mess. They got one healthy running back right now. Early game, not only East Coast, West Coast, West Coast to East Coast, but it's the early start time for the Rams in Buffalo. And between Moss and Singletary and Diggs and Josh Allen, Bill, I think you're probably right. I think they are onto something offensively, and you know Buffalo's going to play good D. Give me the Bills.
Who knew that the Washington football team would get a win early on, but they are 1-1 against the Browns, who have got a win, and they are 1-1. And again, the Browns beat Cincinnati, so I don't know how much that actually counts as a win. It should be like a 0.5. But I'm going to take Haskins and company over what they've got going on in Cleveland. I just can't become a believer in. I know Odell Beckham Jr. has talked about getting out of there. There's been a lot of tumultuous relationship stuff inside that locker room. Cleveland still is a cluster, and I just can't believe in them, and I don't think I could pick them on a continual basis. So I'm going to go with the Washington football team. Mike, back to you.
I like Cleveland in this ball game. I like them to run the football. I know everybody wants to see Baker sling it around, but between Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb, I don't think Washington can stop anybody on the ground. I like that 1-2 combination. I will take, can't believe I'm saying this, Doug, I'll take the Browns.
Yeah, here's what's really going to pain me on this one, Wicked, is that I'm going to agree with you. I like Cleveland in this one as well, and I think you bring up Chubb and Hunt, and I think that that's a great 1-2 combination out of the backfield. I think Washington's defensive front, they're pretty stout, so it's not going to be just a walkover, but I do think Cleveland, they're rested as well. They've got a couple of extra days of preparation for Washington, so I'm going to take the Browns on this one.
The 2-0 Titans going into Minnesota and taking on the 0-2 Vikings, who looked about as bad as they could possibly look in that game against Indianapolis, and you've got Kirk Cousins throwing 3 picks in that ball game. But this is, I think, where the Vikings get their first win of the season, and I'm going to pick the Vikings. Doug, back to you.
Yeah, I'm going to pick Minnesota as well. Ryan Tannehill, correct me if I'm wrong, he sucked for the first 7 years of his NFL career, right?
the first two of his career.
So Ryan Tannehill, the last two, he's been really good. So Ryan Tannehill, I think at some point, look, he's 32 years old. This is what, his 9th or 10th year in the NFL?
What are you talking about?
What, Ryan Tannehill?
Ryan
Your
Tannehill's
fan?
Not
46.
He's not 32 years old. Is he?
He's 46.
Is he really 32 years old? My gosh, I didn't think he's been in the league that long.
Yeah, Ryan Tannehill. I mean, look it up. He left Texas A&M in 2011. I covered Johnny Manziel the next year.
How
his
old
Heisman
am
Trophy.
I now? Where?
I don't know.
How did this happen?
I don't know. I don't know what the hell you were talking about then.
He was born on July 27th, 1988. Makes him 32 years old.
I never would have guessed that. I'm sorry, Doug. I never would have guessed that. I'm going the opposite way of you two. The Vikings are going to start out 0-3. Ryan Tannehill has been a top 6 quarterback ever since he got traded from the toilet in Miami to Tennessee. They've got decent weapons. Derrick Henry pounds the ball. You know you can run on Minnesota. I think the Titans go on the road and win, and I think the Vikings are 0-3.
The Raiders on the road after getting 2 wins. They started out 2-0. They're now going into New England and taking on the Patriots and Cam Newton. And man, I like what the Raiders have going on. I just can't trust them. And because of that trust factor, I'm going to go with a team with virtually no players of name because everybody opted out and Cam Newton. So I'm going to go with the Patriots to go to 2-1 on the season, Michael.
This is another West Coast going east and playing in an early game. I like the Patriots straight up, but this number is 5.5. Give me Josh Jacobs running over people. Give me Carr actually playing within himself, and they have weapons. Waller's a tremendous tight end. I like Oakland to keep it close, but I will take Cam coming home and building on the momentum of that win over Seattle. That was a fun football game on Sunday night or whenever. Well, yeah, Sunday night football. But, Doug, I'll take the Raiders and the points.
Yeah, I'm going to take New England, actually, in this one. I'm with Bill. I think that Cam Newton is rejuvenated with the new change of scenery that he's gotten this year. I think the Patriots offense is a little bit more balanced. I like Waller, don't get me wrong, for Las Vegas. I like Derek Carr. He's a nice player. But I'm going to go with New England on this one. I think it's going to be a close game. Knock on wood if you're with me.
Knock on wood if you're with me.
Then the 49ers. Talk about another West Coast to East Coast. 49ers sitting at 1-1 and not looking too great, and they have lost a boatload of people. And they're staying basically in New York because they're playing on the same turf that they blamed for costing them all the injuries last week. So they're playing at MetLife Stadium again, this time taking on the Giants and not the Jets. The Giants are winless, and they've lost Saquon Barkley for the remainder of the season as well. So, Doug, I'll go back to you. I'm taking the 49ers to get a win, but this is going to be a close one and an ugly game.
Yeah, the Giants just suck out loud. You mentioned Saquon Barkley out for the rest of the season. San Francisco's been banged up as well, Raheem Mostert with a knee injury. George Kittle back at practice today, though, so I think that's going to help Jimmy Garoppolo, who needs that target to. And look, Garoppolo's a little bit banged up as well, but I think that if he can get Kittle back in the lineup, that's just going to take away so much pressure on him. You talked about the fact that they stayed in town from last week playing the Jets at the Meadowlands. Now they're playing the Giants at the Meadowlands. So you take away that West Coast to East Coast. I like the 49ers in a close one on this one. The Giants are one of the worst teams in the league. I think they're going to go to 0-3.
Jimmy G didn't practice today, likely not practicing the rest of the week. Listen, if Nick Mullins starts, give me the Giants at home. All right. Give me New York and what are they? Wayne Gallman. Give me New York and Devonta Freeman. Give me New York and Deion Lewis. Give me Danny Dimes and the Giants if Nick Mullins can't go, because that's just a lot of starters from the San Francisco 49ers that will be out. If Mullins plays or starts and Garoppolo can't go, give me the G-men, Bill.
I will give it to you. One more before we take the quick break. I will give it to you. Take the G-men. The Bengals at 0-2. Taking on the Eagles at 0-2 in Philadelphia. I know in Cincinnati they like what Joe Burrow has brought to the table, but it has not proven to be a winning formula thus far. Meanwhile, Carson Wentz, he is, to say he's struggling would be a mighty understatement. And you talk about the word suckage. He has been terrible, and Doug Peterson has now gone on the defensive for his guy and almost blaming the media for asking tough questions. Things are getting hot in Philadelphia. Wentz stinks out loud. Burrow's better, and I'm going to pick the Bengals on the road to get their first win of the season.
You know, as a guy who has Carson Wentz as his starting quarterback, Bill, you are basically just pouring salt into the wound over the last 14 days of my life. I really do. He's the only quarterback I have on my roster, and the rest of the waiver wire looks like Mitch Trubisky and Nick Mullins. So you're really not making me feel very good about this. I'll say with all the weapons playing at home, I know home field is not what it was. I just don't see Joe Burrow going into Philadelphia and winning. I will take Carson Wentz at home. If this game was in Cincinnati, Doug, I'd go the other way, but give me the Eagles.
I think that's wishful thinking on your part. I think at some point the NFL has to realize, and I hate agreeing with Mike Greenberg because I disagree with him on just about everything. But when he went after Carson Wentz this past week, Carson Wentz sucks. And I think that it's time the NFL realizes that Carson Wentz may have been one of, you put him in that echelon of overrated quarterbacks coming out of college. He's literally done nothing. He's gotten injured. And when he has been able to play, he has done nothing for Philadelphia.
This is not helping my confidence in my fantasy team, Doug. Not what? Not a little bit, none, zero.
I'm sorry. I'm the truth teller. Cincinnati wins this one.
There you go. Let's do this. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back, wrap it up rather quickly in the next segment. But we're going to look at all the games, including the Sunday night game. Packers taking on the Saints. And that big one coming up on Monday, the Kansas City Chiefs taking on the Baltimore Ravens. Joining me on the huddle tonight, Mike Wickett, Doug Russell. We're going to roll through these. We only got about 4 minutes left to go here, guys, so we're going to get through these rather quickly. Steelers hosting the Texans. Texans 0-2. Steelers 2-0. Steelers are playing some good football. And I'll say this about the Texans. I as much as I love J.J. Watt, I just don't believe in what Bill O'Brien's got going on. I'm taking the Steelers at home, Doug.
Yeah, I would agree. And look, Houston's already played Kansas City and Baltimore, and that is partially why they're 0-2, but I just don't see them getting out of it at Pittsburgh against the Steelers. But it'll be fun to see all the Watts together.
Can't believe Bill O'Brien still has a job and got promoted. Give me the Steelers at home.
Colts at home, 1-1. Jets 0-2. Jets stink on ice. Colts at least have a decent quarterback. I'm taking the Colts at Lucas. Mike, back to you.
Flyover Country loves the fact that both New York teams suck. Give me the Colts at home and a big day for T.Y. Hilton.
Big day for Jonathan Taylor. Go on Wisconsin. Colts roll over the Jets because they are just terrible.
And the Chargers, who are finding quarterbacks and suddenly having a little bit of life, they are at home hosting the 0-2 Carolina Panthers. As much as I like Teddy Bridgewater, I just can't pick the Panthers right now. I think they're too much in rebuild mode. I'm taking the Chargers at home to go 2-1. Back to you, Doug.
Yeah, no Christian McCaffrey this week as well, so the Panthers don't have a chance. I think the Chargers are going to roll.
I do, too. I think the more exciting thing is the lawsuit Tyrod Taylor is going to file against the Chargers for puncturing his lung and knocking him out of last week's game. I like the Chargers at home. I like Herbert to get his first win.
If you hear this sound, this is the Cardinals pounding yet another nail in Matt Patricia's coffin. The Cardinals are at home as Matt Patricia tries to explain his way out of the start that they have. I'm taking the Cardinals, DeAndre Hopkins and Kyler Murray and everybody to beat up on the Lions yet again. Doug, back to you.
In the words of Leonardo DiCaprio in Catch Me If You Can, I concur.
You concur. Well, it was a bicycle accident. The boy told us. So you concur.
High scoring game, lots of points. Look for Hawkinson in the end zone. The Cardinals stink against tight ends, but I like Arizona. I might be buying what you guys are selling. The Cardinals might be for real.
The Broncos, who also stink on ice, are at home, but here comes Tom Brady and the 1-1 Buccaneers into town. Brady, Gronk's going to bust out at some point. They're going to start using him with only a couple of catches on the season. I'm going to take the Buccaneers on the road. Mike?
This was sexier when it was Drew Locke, maybe one of the future faces of the NFL versus Brady. I like Tampa to go on the road. I don't think Denver's going to have enough to keep up.
You don't believe in Jeff Driscoll?
No, I do not believe in Jeff Driscoll.
As the quarterback, yeah, I think Tampa Bay is going to roll. And Tom Brady will take what Bruce Arians said last week to heart, and I think he's going to have a good game.
You got the Seahawks at home with Russell Wilson having a terrific season, taking on the king of the watermelon kick. That is the Dallas Cowboys and Mike McCarthy. Yet again, Pete Carroll and Mike McCarthy. I think Pete Carroll, again, gets the best of them. I'm taking the Seahawks at home in this one, Doug.
It's Max House of Horrors, right, Seattle? So this on the anniversary of the Fail Mary, I think Jason Myers is going to, in overtime, kick a field goal that's going to go over the upright. That's how they're going to call it on replay. It's going to say that it was no good, but the referees are going to screw it up. So Seattle's going to win on a disputed play in overtime at home against Dallas. Seattle goes to 3-0.
New England proved you can play with Seattle without the 12s in full attendance. I think this is a closer game than people are giving it credit, but I still love Russell Wilson as a quarterback. I hate him as a person and everything about him, but from a quarterback spot, he's fantastic, and he'll will this team to 13 wins.
Then you've got the Monday night contest, the Chiefs and the Ravens. Boy, this is one we're all salivating over. 2-0, both teams, Kansas City on the road in this one. But I'm still going to say Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid, they come away with the win, Mike.
Dud game for Lamar last week. He bounces back. This is the last two MVPs. This is great. You think Sunday night's matchup is juicy. This one really is. Give me Baltimore at home. I know a lot of friends in Kansas City that are watching on the stream right now are upset by that, but Baltimore at home, bounce back game for Lamar, Doug.
Yeah, Lamar against Patrick. What a contest in the AFC between Kansas City and Baltimore. I think 43-year-old running back Mark Ingram is going to score the game-winning touchdown. Baltimore is going to take this one, but it's going to be a close one.
Packers and Saints. I'm taking the Packers to win this one. I wasn't at first, but I've talked myself into it. Back to you, Doug.
Yeah, I like the Saints in this one. I think it's going to be a close game. I think it depends on Michael Thomas and whether or not he's going to be able to play and give Drew Brees that target that he's looking for. But, boy, I think that I'm not going to say the Packers are going to be exposed, but I think it's going to be a difficult game for them. So I'm going to take New Orleans.
Mike, 10 seconds.
Packers win. Home field is out. 31-24 Green Bay.
All right, that's from the Bill Michaels Huddle on the Bill Michaels Radio Network. A lot of fun. Again, thanks to Bill for inviting us and Joe Zanzola and, of course, Mike Wicked as well. I hope that he and I get a chance to do a couple more of these. I had a lot of fun with him. It was great catching up with him. If you didn't catch the whole thing, it's on my Facebook page, so you go to Facebook.com/Doug Russell. I think it's on Mike's as well, and it might be on Bill Michaels' Facebook page and on their social media accounts as well. So if you want to check out the whole thing, it was a lot of fun. So again, thanks to those guys for making it happen. Moving along, a year ago today, so September 30th,
2019 was Bucks Media Day. Now, we didn't know that the pandemic was going to hit, but this basketball season that began a year ago today is still going on. The NBA Finals are set. It's the Lakers and the Heat. The Bucks bounced in the second round of the playoffs in five games by Miami, a team that they had trouble with all season long. But the Heat improbably wound up in the NBA Finals. But it was a year ago today that they held their media day, which kicks off the season, which kicks off training camp. So what did we get right? What did we get wrong? It's time to take a look back into what we were talking about exactly a year ago. We're going to start with my radio show, which was on 94.5 ESPN a year ago, and the discussion that I had with the Bucks players and coaches, general manager from Media Day, and then that will dovetail into my conversation with the Athletics Bucks beat writer Eric Name. Again, what did we get right? What did we get wrong? This is from exactly 1 year ago. Bucks season is sort of here almost. Training camp opens tomorrow. 60 wins last season for the Bucks. An appearance in the Eastern Conference Finals before bowing out in six games. They won the first two. I think we all kind of took those next two that they needed to win maybe a little bit for granted, but nevertheless, the Bucks did not take it for granted this offseason because they feel like there's some unfinished business. I had a chance to go down to Fiserv Forum earlier today to take part in the Bucks Media Day festivities and was there for John Horst and Mike Budenholzer. They led things off, and they were posed a big-picture question.
Keith James with the Associated Press. How you guys doing? The great thing about having such a wonderful season last year is, you know, success. You are excited. The fans are excited. I guess the curse is expectations have never been higher. So how are you managing those expectations heading into the year?
I'll go first, and I know Coach has some thoughts on this too. Internal expectations are what matter to us. And you know, we've been saying this, you know, for over a year now. We believe it. We live it. We care about getting better every day. We want to improve on what we did last year. We want to improve. There's a lot of ways to improve. We want to improve our flexibility from our roster. We want our players to develop organically and grow and become better players. We want our coaches to become better coaches. We want my front office staff to become better. And so we're focused every single day on getting better at the little things every single day and hopefully building something where we can sustain success over a long period of time.
Yeah, you know, I think very similar to what John said. We are much more focused on what we're doing every day. The message to the team won't be that different than what it was going into last season. There were expectations with a new coach and a great roster additions, and every team goes into every season with expectations. And really our attack point is just, what are we doing every day? How are we getting better every day? How are we competing every day? You know, are we playing unselfishly? Are we playing together? All those things that are just our core beliefs. If we're doing those on a day in and day out basis, the chips will fall where they may, and we feel great about the team and the talent we have. And if we focus on that day-to-day, you know, our priorities, I think the expectations will fall in line.
Doug Russell from WTMJ and ESPN Radio. I'm just curious for both of you. I know, but a year ago you were new coming into the organization. John, obviously you've been here for a long time, but how much different was this offseason after what had happened, the deep run into the playoffs, as compared to where you were a year ago?
I think, Doug, for me, different, it's maybe more than slightly, but not a lot more than slightly different than two off seasons ago, in that you can see this team coming. You know, you could see with Giannis and with Chris and with Eric that this team was growing, and then you throw Brooke into that mix and some of the things that we did last year throughout the course of the season. This group looks like they're growing, looks like they're getting better, looks like they fit and they make sense, and that we can compete and sustain success for a long period of time with this group, and that's been the goal. When you have that in place, when you have that core in place, when you have a system in play, the way that Bud plays, and it kind of helps the players and accentuates their skills, and you have a superstar like Giannis, it makes it clear. It's an easier job, quite frankly, to be able to identify the guys that fit in your system and your style of play and fit with Giannis and to make decisions. And it's really a freeing thing for an executive, from my role, to have something in place where you can plug pieces in and you know they're going to work. And we're not going to be right 100% of the time, but it really is a clear picture for us to operate under.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great opportunity for me to tell him how amazing. It is not easy what he just did. And I think, you know, we talked about continuity a little bit earlier in the year. When you have a good team and has as much success as this group had last year, to keep the core together and to basically bring the team back together in today's NBA is incredibly difficult. So I think the job that John did, the job that ownership did, as the coach, you know, you love having that great year, and then you're just like, oh, man, are we going to be able to keep the group together? And I think we've all seen it all throughout the league for lots of years. Keeping a good team together is really, really hard to do, and that's why I'm so excited about what John was able to do, what we were able to do. And, I think there was a lot of, how good could the group be? What were we going to be like as the new coach and new system and all that? To have the success and then to be able to keep the group together and have that continuity for me is it's hard to be able to tell you how valuable that is.
And Doug, it's a good chance to acknowledge, I think, the guys that you guys are going to talk to. It says a lot about Chris, says a lot about Brooke, says a lot about George. In particular, those guys wanted to be back here. They feel like there's unfinished business. They want to be part of this group. They love our culture. They love being part of our culture. And for those guys, you know, ultimately they were free agents, and it was their choice whether or not they came back to Milwaukee and to play for the Bucks. And they said yes. And so it's really a credit to those guys as well.
Giannis, he was posed a question leading off by longtime Bucks television announcer Jim Paschke.
Yanni, how often do you think about the journey the two of you have been on that has you here together today?
I probably think about it every day. I think we both realize how blessed we are. And we cannot forget what, you know, bring us and what put us in this position, which is hard work, you know, and that's what we're going to keep doing. As long as we, working hard and pushing ourselves forward and believing in ourselves, great things like that can happen. And but it's amazing. From where we started, where we've, where we are right now, it's been an amazing dream. Unbelievable journey. So at the end of the day, we're going to keep working hard and we're going to try to go in farther. Right?
Thanasis, your thoughts on being with your brother finally?
It's something I'm really excited about. Just in general, being with not just with my brother, with my family, you know, back in Milwaukee full time. Just to make my family proud, myself proud, you know, and just keep working hard.
Eric, where you are from ESPN? Last year was such a phenomenal year for you guys, everything you accomplished. But you're coming in a new role this year where, you know, you're going from kind of catching people by surprise to now, you know, you being 100. How would you, what's your expectation coming to this year, you know, in this new role? And then just a funny question, will you lead the league in meme mugs again this year? I mean, I know you had a lot of meme mugs last year at the Ducks.
Hopefully lead the league in meme mugs again this year. You know, I have a lot of crazy plays. But at the end of the day, hey, we got to do what we do. We cannot start thinking about what other teams are going to do against us and if we are handled and if teams going to come out here in Milwaukee and try to play hard against us. And, that's going to happen. But we got to focus on ourselves, which is getting better each day, competing in practice so you can carry over to the game and just build that winning, culture and that the great habits that we built last year. And if we do that, we're gonna be one of the teams that's gonna be the last one standing, and that's our goal. To get better each day and improve.
Eric Name, The Athletic. Giannis, this is the shortest offseason you've had and probably the busiest offseason you've had. How do you feel like this offseason went from a preparation standpoint?
It was a really short offseason. But I was able to, get in the gym, do my job. I was tired physically and mentally because we had a long season also, and then right away, I had a lot of things to do with Nike, with my family, with the national team also. But I'm excited. I'm excited for the season. I'm excited to play with my teammate, my new teammates. I'm excited to go out there and compete hard for the for Milwaukee and for the fans.
Matt Velasquez, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Nowadays, there's a fascination with player movement and who's going to go to what team and where and when and all that kind of stuff. now, Giannis, your name is going to be, you know, thrown out there in those conversations a lot this season with your contract situation. How do you plan to handle all those questions as they come?
Obviously, I talked a little bit about it last year, and I said, you know, that I'm not going to talk about it a lot because, and I thought about it this summer when I was, you know, sitting down with Nance and my family, you know, the couch watching shows and all that. That, you know, I feel like if you have a great team, and we, our goal is to, you know, win a championship, be the last team standing, and, you know, get better each day. I think it's disrespectful towards my teammate talking about, you know, my free agency, what I'm going to do. So when the time is right, we're all going to talk about it. I don't think the time is right now. Obviously, our focus, as I said, is to get better each day, compete, go out there and compete as hard as we can. And I'm not going to talk about it a lot this season, and I'm not going to try to address it.
All right, so we're done then, right? Because everywhere you turn this year, when the Milwaukee Bucks are being discussed, it's going to be Giannis and his contract. Where is Giannis going to be playing in 2 years? Obviously under contract for this year. After this season, he's eligible for the Supermax bonus. If for whatever reason that's not agreed to, then he's under contract for one more year, then he gains full free agency. The Bucks obviously can offer him more money than any other team in the NBA. They're also positioned pretty well, I think, for team success, something that Giannis is also craving and has talked about really throughout the course of his entire career in the NBA as well. So at some point it will be discussed. It will be discussed nationally probably every time the Bucks play on national television, which seems to be just about every other game this upcoming season. That's great. National recognition, super. But the Bucks are no longer the hunting. They're the hunted. They're the favorites in the East, and everybody's going to be gunning for them. Eric, it was nice to see you in your natural habitat earlier today.
It was great to be back in my natural habitat, though I do love hanging out over on Capitol and seeing you guys in your natural habitat. I would much prefer my own.
Fair enough. How did Bud answer that question that I so rudely cut off while I was doing some editing?
He kind of talked about how, strangely enough, teaching might even be more involved this year, because when you do already put in the fundamentals from the first year, year two is all about the much smaller details and all of the intricacies of any offensive or defensive system that they're running, and in the ways that they want to change things slightly from last season to, you know, cope with some of the things that they struggled with in the Eastern Conference Finals. So to me, it was an interesting answer that teaching, he thought, actually became a bigger part, because, you know, I would think, you know, bigger ideas is the stuff that you have to teach. And the little things, I guess maybe I don't see as teaching, but he definitely thought it was. So it'll be interesting to see kind of what this season looks like, because all of the major changes, the overhaul, that has been done. That is over with. Now it is fine-tuning this machine that you put together that won 60 games last year.
It's the million-pound elephant in the room, and it's going to be discussed every single time the Bucks play a nationally televised game, and that's the future contract status of Giannis Antetokounmpo. He shut it down, or at least tried to shut it down earlier today, saying, and I think he's right, I mean, it's disrespectful on a lot of different levels to be talking about this, you know, 2 years before his free agency even hits. But on a realistic standpoint, I mean, how else can the Bucks tamp down this narrative that Giannis is destined for New York or Los Angeles?
They can't. It is not up to them. And that was kind of what I tweeted out when Giannis said, you know, this isn't something I'm going to talk about this season, or, you know, it's not something that I really want to focus on. And it's like, well, you don't really get to dictate what other people focus on. And that is kind of the reality of the modern day NBA, that everyone around the basketball world will focus on who could be the next big thing, who's the next face of the league, where they could play, what team they could play with, what other players they could play with, what other coaches they might want to play for. That is always going to be the focus, and that's just kind of the cycle that we're in now. That's how all of this this works, and that's how people generate a lot of buzz, because honestly, Giannis is one of the absolute best basketball players in the world. He should be one of the most interesting basketball players in the world, but he's boring. He's incredibly boring. He's just really good at his job. He executes his job. He doesn't create drama like a guy like LeBron James. He just goes about his business, does his job, does his work, and now his team has been successful because he's been paired with a great coach in Mike Budenholzer. So it's really difficult, I think, for people from the outside to figure out ways to talk about Giannis. You can only watch a highlight so many times. You can only watch a mean mug so many times. You can only watch him dunk on somebody so many times. It's entertaining each time, but there's no substance. There's nothing greater to that story. So instead, it's a conversation about where else could he go play? What other team could he go play with? And that is how people create something interesting about Giannis, and it's not going anywhere. That's the reality of the modern day NBA, and that's what people are going to talk about, whether or not Giannis ultimately leaves or wants to leave or is thinking about leaving or can even do anything other than sign a Supermax extension next summer. He still has 2 years left on his contract, and as far as it goes with the Bucks, I would be shocked if, even if he says next summer he doesn't want to sign a Supermax, that they would even say, sure, we'll trade you. They're going to try to win a championship and see if they can convince them to stick around. So to me, it's a total non-story here. It's going to be a non-story with Giannis the whole year, but that doesn't mean people aren't going to talk about it. And if that means they have to figure out the most interesting places he could play in a total hypothetical situation, they'll do it. That's just going to be how it is with Giannis.
Yeah, I heard Brooklyn Nets over the weekend, so for whatever.
Oh, very interesting.
Yeah, that's a new one, right?
Yeah,
absolutely. And the narrative of Milwaukee and the NBA is Milwaukee's boring, Mike Budenholzer's boring, Giannis is boring. It's a natural fit. I mean, come on.
it really does all kind of work together. And I think ultimately that's kind of, if Giannis ends up staying, that's kind of what it's all destined to be, right? Like, Tim Duncan was the most boring superstar in the history of the NBA. He was a guy that won MVPs and was just about his business. He was in a small market in San Antonio. He stayed there his whole career, and that was that, right? Like, obviously, he is someone who I think you can discuss as one of the 10 to 20 greatest players in the history of the game, but there's never a ton of headlines about him. He just did his work and stayed in San Antonio, and that was that. And, you know, if things go right in Milwaukee, that'll be the exact same thing that happens with Giannis.
How does this Bucks team make up for the loss of Malcolm Brogdon? Is it just as easy to say plug Wesley Matthews in there and let him go?
I mean, I don't think it's that easy. I think Malcolm Brogdon is obviously much younger than Wesley Matthews. Matthews has lost a ton of his athleticism since tearing his Achilles in Portland a few years back. He's just not someone that can replicate what Malcolm Brogdon did. Malcolm Brogdon was the third most frequent driver on the team. This offense is predicated on guys that can beat people off the dribble. And really last year, that was on Giannis, that was on Eric Bledsoe, and that was on Malcolm Brogdon. And if you take Malcolm Brogdon out, you can see the offense stagnate. And I think we saw that throughout the playoffs, that offense wasn't quite as interesting, wasn't quite as dynamic with Malcolm Brogdon off the floor. And then once he returned, he wasn't able to turn the corner in the same way that he normally could. So you saw how that became more difficult, which means you're going to have to see this team do different things. I thought there was a really interest during Wesley Matthews' availability. He was up there with Kyle Korver and George Hill. And, you know, he mentioned something about how he was chasing Kyle Korver around some screens and around a pin down in a scrimmage. And he was thinking about, oh, yeah, I used to do this on against Kyle Korver. Now he's on my team and he gets to run off those screens for us. And in my head, I immediately started to think, oh, pin down screens. That's not really something the Bucks did last year. And all of those things, you're going to have this different personnel. So that means you're going to have to change things around a little bit. That means Bud's going to have to get creative and tweak things around and try to find different ways to create offense. And using a shooter like Kyle Korver is one way. Wesley Matthews also shoots more threes than Malcolm Brogdon. Maybe you can do something with that. So I don't think it's as simple as just plugging them in. It's going to require some tweaks. It's going to require some changes, and I think Mike Budenholzer kind of referenced some of that today, that, you know, they're going to do some things a little bit differently this year, and I would guess that we'll start to see that kind of unfold over the next month or so.
Obviously, the two favorites in the East are the Bucks and the 76ers. The Celtics are always kind of hanging around. The Pacers were a playoff team last year. Everybody knows what the Nets did this past offseason. But is there a team that is kind of just maybe waiting to make some noise in the East that might make a breakthrough this season? Or do you think it's just going to be the usual suspects and it'll play out the way it's supposed to play out?
I think it'll be pretty much the usual suspects. I think all those teams that you listed off are kind of interesting. I'm curious to see what the Pacers look like with Brogdon there this year. I know they're not really the most exciting team, and you know, I don't know if Victor Oladipo is quite the superstar that you need to make noise in the playoffs, but I'll be interested to see what they do. And then I'm really kind of interested, and I yelled at a bunch of people last year for being interested in this team, but I think I'm going to be interested in the Bulls this year. I don't know if they're going to be a great team. I don't know if they're going to be a great roster, but maybe there's something there where there's enough young guys where finally they hit it. That's been the story for the last probably 4 or 5 years with this Bulls team. So ultimately it's unlikely, but I'll be interested to see kind of what they look like, what Zach LaVine can do there. And then I think the Pistons are kind of sitting there trying to figure things out. Obviously, they didn't give the Bucks much of a series last year, but Blake Griffin was hurt for a lot of that. And I think a lot of people don't realize that Blake Griffin was all NBA last year. Like he was a guy that was right in that conversation with among the very best power forwards in the league before he got hurt at the end of the season. So you have that. Maybe Luke Kennard takes a step forward there. You had Derrick Rose to the mix. Joe Johnson can give them some minutes off the bench. They added Tony Snell as well. For all the Bucks fans that are looking for more shooting, Tony Snell can certainly do that. So I think those two teams in the Central, oddly enough, are kind of interesting to me. And then the Orlando Magic, they put together an end of the season that was really interesting after the All-Star break. They were the second-best defense in the league. So I'm curious if that's for real, but ultimately they may not score enough points. So those three are all teams that I'm sort of interested in. I don't think any of them are ready to make some noise, but I'll be watching them.
The Bulls won 22 games last year, you know.
Oh, I'm aware. I'm very aware. And they were awful to watch. It was an absolute abomination on basketball. But maybe this year they put it together.
All right, we will see. They've got 82 games to figure it out. Eric Name from The Athletic. It's day one. Enjoy training camp, and I'm sure we'll talk again soon as the season gets closer.
I look forward to it.
All right, welcome back to 2020. That was exactly a year ago today. That was the conversation that I had with The Athletic's Bucks beat writer Eric Name, and before that from Bucks Media Day. This basketball season, again, still going on. We had all hoped that the Bucks would be in the NBA Finals. What a weekend, by the way, that would have been. What a Sunday night that would have been if you not only had the Brewers getting into the playoffs, you also had the Packers and the Saints on Sunday Night Football. And, oh, yeah, by the way, the Bucks could have been playing for a shot at the NBA Finals. Unfortunately, it didn't work out that way. But to me, it's interesting to go back a year and to see what we got right, what we got wrong. And again, the pandemic has caused this basketball season to extend and extend and extend. And it's not officially over yet, even though a year ago today, we were all at Fiserv Forum talking about the Bucks as the odds-on favorite in the East. Obviously, that didn't happen. I did miss one anniversary on Monday, but I did want to circle right back around to it. And it was 20 years ago. Well, I guess 20 years and 2 days ago. So it was 20 years ago on Monday, the final game ever played at County Stadium. I was there. I was covering the game. I had been to County Stadium countless times, and I know that there's some that are listening right now that have never been to a game at County Stadium. And I've always said this about the former home of the Brewers. It was a toilet, but it was my toilet. It was a toilet that I loved, but I understood that it needed to be replaced. I was there on opening day when a pipe burst over the first base side stands and an entire section of fans in 40-degree weather was just doused with what I hope was water. I don't know if it was water. I think it may have been water. I pray that it was water because God only knows what else it could have been. County Stadium was a crumbling relic by the time the wrecking ball finally hit. But
That doesn't mean that it didn't have great memories. That doesn't mean that it wasn't part of my childhood. Maybe it was part of your childhood as well. There's going to be a generation of Bucks fans that miss the Bradley Center, for example. There's going to be a generation of Brewers fans that are younger than I am that are going to feel that way about Miller Park. Now, I don't know how long Miller Park is going to be here. I guess it's American Family Field starting next year. But I hope it's around for a long time. That having been said, nothing does last forever. And there will be sadness when Miller Park, American Family Field, home of the current home of the Brewers, when the wrecking ball meets it, hopefully not for many, many years down the road. But then again, the Texas Rangers, the Atlanta Braves, they've already torn down or moved out of their ballparks and had those stadiums. Actually, they haven't been torn down, but just repurposed into something else. That having been said, one of the highlights, and maybe the highlight of the closing of Milwaukee County Stadium, was the great, wonderful closing speech by the illustrious voice of the Brewers, Bob Uecker. We'll leave you with this.
Well, County Stadium, here you are in all your glory. 48 years have slipped away like a blink of an eye. A champion was born in your midst, and you stood proud. Oh, how you have changed in so many ways. Yet, one thing remains, a bond between heroes and fans, and an ambition to succeed. It was here that boys became men. Men became champions. And champions became legends. But tonight is the final curtain. It's time to say goodbye. We will never forget you for what was, will always be. So long, old friend, and good night, everybody.
Just a speech that sends chills up and down my spine. I was there. It was incredible to watch in person. It's hard to believe that it's been 20 years, so we wanted to bring you Bob Uecker's incredible, wonderful speech that closed out the ballpark as the lights went down around him. That's it for this edition of the Doug Russell Podcast. Again, please subscribe. Give us a nice review. We're now on iTunes, Google Play, Alexa, Spotify, Amazon Music, TuneIn, Stitcher. Tell your friends. We're trying to grow this thing. We've got an all-new show on Friday. We'll review the Brewers and the Dodgers in the playoffs and catch up with a couple of old friends. We've got some neat things on tap. We hope you're around for that. That's been the Doug Russell Podcast. Thanks for listening. We'll see you on Friday.